Fouillet, the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. All of our business before this court in front of the air, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Allen, and I'm here with Judge Meredith to my right and Judge Toth to my left. We're convened today to consider arguments in the matter of Richard R. Birdie versus Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, case number 22-1199. Would counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, enter your appearance for the record?
Okay, this is Carpenter. Here's on behalf of Mr. Birdie.
Nice to see you, Mr. Carpenter, Secretary.
Good morning. May please support your honors, Justin Seifert, representing the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, with me as Deputy Chief Counsel, Sarah Chief.
Nice to see you, Mr. Seifert. Mr. Carpenter, I understand you want some time for rebuttal. What a surprise. We'll make that happen, and you can begin whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Birdie. Mr. Birdie believes that this court's rule of law, as established in this court's decision in Jones v. Shinseki, that the effects of medication must be explicitly contemplated by the VA's rating schedule, applies to this case in the negative, because there is no explicit reference to how the ameliorating effects of medication are to be considered. The words continuous medication are used in the VA general rating formula for mental disorders at the non-compensable rating and at the 10% rating. But in both of those cases, they are addressed specifically and are not in any way in reference to whether or not there are ameliorating effects. Specifically, in the non-compensable, the VA rating criteria says that a mental condition that has been formally diagnosed, but in which the symptoms are not severe enough to interfere with occupational or social functioning, or to require continuous medication.
So, Mr. Carpenter, what do you make of our decision in Martinez-Bowden that looked at 4.130? And basically said, it had the same dynamics with the DSM-5 diagnosis.
Well, I don't really see any correlation between the holding in Martinez-Bowden. This case is about whether or not the rating criteria does or does not contemplate the ameliorating effects, in the words of Jones, that it is explicitly contemplated. I am trying to point out that when we examine...
How about a different case? A case, McCarroll.
Yes.
Okay. What would you make of McCarroll? Because in that case, it's contemplated expressly at a certain rating, but not consistently throughout. Would you distinguish it? How do you account for that?
Well, I think the first... comparison between both the disability in Jones and the disability in McCarroll versus the disability in this case is that a psychiatric disability has a unique rating process. In both McCarroll and in Jones, the rating criteria addressed the specific identified disability. In the first, migraine headaches, and in the second, it went blank, but it was a specific condition. And in both of those cases, the rating code addressed that specific disability. In this case, the VA chose not to have a rating criteria for individual mental disorders. Instead, the Secretary chose to create a rating criteria using what they refer to as a general rating formula. So regardless of the label, with the exception of eating disorders, all mental disorders are treated the same way. which is why it's critical, in our view, to examine the language used in the rating criteria. And in both the non-compensable and in the 10% rating, first it's phrased in the alternative. So it is used in a specific alternative consequence. And in that alternative consequence for non-compensable, the medication must be required, continuous medication must be required, or it is a non-compensable rating. However, when you go to the 10% rating, the alternative from the examination of actual symptomatology is that the symptoms are controlled by continuous medication. And when you examine the language used by the secretary, the secretary's instructions are clear and unambiguous. They direct VA adjudicators to not assign a compensable rating if there is a diagnosis, but there is no requirement for continuous medication, and the symptoms are not severe enough. But those are not conjunctive. The non-compensable rating criteria is framed in the disjunctive, as is the 10% rating. And the importance of that in the context of this case is that as the Federal Circuit has interpreted this rating criteria under 4.130, they have recognized that this is symptoms-driven. And when it is symptoms-driven, you are obviously examining what the symptoms are, not what the absence of the symptoms are. And in both the non-compensable rating and in the 10% rating, the only time continuous medication is referred to is when it is either controlled or not controlled. And if it is controlled, then that requires a minimum rating of 10%. And that, in our view, resolves the question of whether or not the rule of law in Jones should be applied and whether it was error for the board to have even considered the ameliorating effects by implication, as they did in their decision in this case, not to consider the 70% or the 100% rating, or maybe put more accurately, to reject those without an adequate statement of reasons or bases. We believe, Your Honors, that...
Could I ask one question? Because I find this a pretty difficult case, I'll tell you that.
I agree, Your Honor.
If somebody gets a 10% rating under the way in which you've just been describing this. Okay, so they're assigned a 10% rating, and they're assigned a 10% rating, let's say, because they have symptoms controlled by continuous medication. Okay? Under the principle that VA has to maximize benefits, would that mean that in any case in which there is a 10% rating assigned in which there is continuous medication use, that VA is required to pretend that the person wasn't taking medication so that then they would look at the symptoms that would exist in the absence of the use of the medication?
I don't think so, Your Honor. At least that's not the way that I read or understand the general rating formula for mental disorders. To the contrary, as I read the rating criteria set out, the only time medication is taken into account is if the symptoms are controlled.
Well,
the case in which they're...
I want to articulate this as best I can. Okay, we're outside of the 10%. Let's assume that a person is using medication, okay? And just for the sake of my hypothetical, the medication the person is using has made a difference, sort of as the board found here. Let's just take that, right? That it reduced whatever symptom it was, hypervigilance or whatever. Okay.
Nightmares, I believe, was...
But, you know, for whatever. It's made it better or made concentration better than it would have been. It seems to me that the logic of the argument that says that medication isn't contemplated at those levels at all is that the board or VA would have to say what is the nature of the symptom in terms of occupational or social impairment,
mm-hmm.
discounting whatever work the medication did. Is that right?
In the context of how you're presenting it, I think that would be correct. To be candid with the court, I don't think that's a correct understanding of the VA's general rating formula. To the contrary, I think VA's general rating formula says to VA adjudicators, don't go there. It is a binary choice. Medication either controls the symptoms, and it's a 10% rating, or medication does not control the symptoms. And when medication does not control the symptoms, as we believe the case is clearly in this matter, that you have to do what you do in evaluating the symptom-driven overall rating criteria that is articulated in 4.130.
Okay, let me see. We may be on the same page or not, so let me try this again, right? So assume that a person is taking medication, right? Because the world would be easier if you had somebody who had no medication use at all, right? Because then what you would do, let's just start there, you would take the observable symptoms, and then you would translate that and say those symptoms cause a certain level of occupational and social impairment, and then you would peg it, whether it's at 100, 70, 50, 30. We're on the same page.
Yes.
Okay. Now let's take a situation where somebody is using medication. The symptoms are not controlled in the sense that you would only be at a 10%.
Right.
Okay? But the medication has some value, right? Because it is having some effect. I'm just wondering what to do in that situation, right? Now, it may be that it's not controlled in the sense that it brings you all the way down and you're just totally able to function, right?
Right.
You'd still be at 10% here. It wouldn't matter, right? But do you discount the fact that, say that you're, without medication, your memory loss would be 8 on a scale of 10? I know that's not how it measures, but right, I'm using the pain measure.
Yes.
But with the medication, it's actually a 4 out of 10,
mm-hmm.
right? Do we discount that, making that symptom better? Meaning we don't say your memory loss is only at 4. Do we say if you weren't taking medication and it's not fully controlling you, but it's making things better, do we pretend that medication is not being used at all?
Well, with respect, Your Honor, I believe that you're creating a problem that does not exist in the general rating formula that's been created by the Secretary. To make the analysis that you're suggesting in your hypothetical or in your reading of the criteria is to create a problem where there isn't one. The question of medication is only in the context of whether or not medication controls the symptom.
Let me try it this way. The board here, and I know you didn't write the brief, but counsel in their opening brief said the error the board made was in its reasons or basis discussing the fact that medication made something better.
Right.
Okay. So if the board had simply said nothing about medication but just assessed the nature of the symptom that actually was affected by the medication as what the board said, right?
Right.
So is the problem just that the board used the term medication? Or is the problem that the board assessed the severity of the symptom as it was affected by medication? Because I'm not entirely sure why. I hope that I'm making up a problem that doesn't exist. right? Because then it would be much easier for me to solve this case. But it seemed to me that's what the error alleged was.
Well, I think that is a fair characterization of how the error was alleged. And in fairness, and I've been doing this for a couple of weeks now, dealing with psychiatric cases is the greatest challenge in terms of evaluation. Because the difficulty is that you're evaluating symptoms almost exclusively based upon the representation of the veteran or how his actions are perceived by others, as opposed to what is normally the case with symptoms, that they are relatively objectively measurable. There is no objectivity here. Everything is a subjective analysis and an interpretation of behavior. And as a consequence, that's why I believe that it is that the error as described was to have used medication as a factor. That is frankly the way that I read Jones, is that Jones says you don't go to the ameliorating factors.
What if the board was considering between a 10 and a 30% rating? Because medication would be a dispositive factor in that. Right, I mean, distinguishing between a 10 and 30% would be, is this controllable by medication? Now, granted, the implication would be different. It's that it's not controllable. But it would be, I mean, it would be an adjudicative factor.
Well, Your Honor, that's not the way that I read the general rating formula. To me, there is no basis for considering medication after the 10% rating.
Right, but if you're determining between a 10 and a 30.
Well, once you go to the 30, then you are only looking at symptoms. 10 is a diagnostic criteria in which you are examining first, in the language of the regulation, occupation or social impairment due to mild or transient symptoms which decrease work efficiency and the ability.
I mean, the implication would be that those same symptoms, which maybe if they were controllable by medication, would get you a 10% rating, would now earn you a 30% rating because they're non-controllable by medication.
No, Your Honor. I'm sorry, that you, when you go to the 30% rating and every sequential rating above that, medication is never mentioned. It is legally improper for the VA adjudicator to even consider the effects of medication under this rating.
You know, I also mentioned the case Martinez-Bowden first, right, which is a formal diagnosis is also required at 30% rating. That's not formally mentioned.
Well, except that it is, I believe, by implication, because the non-compensable rating is that you have a mental condition that has been formally diagnosed. But the symptoms aren't severe enough to interfere with occupational or social functioning. That's why you get a non-compensable rating. You've got a diagnosis, but you essentially don't have any symptoms that are severe enough, because severity is what you're evaluating when you're assigning the rating at every rating above the non-compensable rating.
So your argument is that's not at all analogous to whether the symptoms would be treatable by medication or not?
Absolutely not. Because first, it says that if it's diagnosed and it requires continuous medication, then it's not non-compensable, because you go to the 10% rating, and in the or alternative criteria under the 10% rating, those symptoms are being controlled by medication. So if it requires continuous medication and they are controlled, the mandatory minimum, if you will, is a 10% rating. But at that point, the stop sign goes up and you stop considering medication, because everything in the criteria above makes no further reference to medication, either in the alternative or in conjunction with some, I believe, unattainable attempt to determine the ameliorating effects in a psychiatric context of medication.
So your argument, just so I just want to make it clear, The board's error was discussing medication at all.
Yes, sir.
If the board had simply not had the sentence about medication, but assessed the symptomatology that Mr. Birdie displayed.
Yes.
Even if that symptomatology was affected by the medication he was taking, right? So with the medication, it was at this level, right? In a hypothetical world in which he had never taken the medication, it would have been higher, but it wasn't because he was taking medication.
Correct.
It would have been okay to assess the symptomatology at that level, even though it was affected by medication, as long as you didn't say, and I'm not trying to be flip, as long as the board didn't say that medication made it better.
Yes, because Vasquez Claudio instructs that ratings under this grading criteria are symptom-driven. So you look to the symptoms, and you look for it under the characterization in VA regulation of duration, severity, and...
Even if the symptoms are... So, for example, in a range of motion issue, mm-hmm. right, it would be error if they say, oh, look, you've got full range of motion, but the reason you have full range of motion is you just got a cortisone shot.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That would be error,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
You're not saying the same thing here, right? In other words, see, because your position actually makes this much easier analytically, right? Because the idea isn't that the level of symptomatology is the problem because it was affected by the use of medication. It seems like the argument is if the board had just looked at the level of symptomatology, and said it's at 5, and that equates, okay.
Right, right.
Even though it could have been at 9 if there was no medication,
right?
Mm-hmm. You're not saying the board has to assume it's at 9, meaning get some sort of opinion about what the symptomatology
yes.
would be in a world in which he wasn't taking the medication. You're saying you just can't say medication.
Correct. Because I believe that is the clear... clean rule that was established in Jones.
Could I jump in there? So
yes,
if you're suggesting that you do look at the veteran in the medicated state and what symptoms he was experiencing in a medicated state for the 30% ratings and above, what's the harm if the board did mention medication, if the symptomatology they looked at is the same, whether you're talking about medication or you're just looking at the veteran in a medicated state?
Well, let me try to answer that in two ways. In this case, the harm was that the board arbitrarily rejected the identification of suicidal ideation, although they gave it lip service and said, we acknowledge that suicidal ideation is in the 70% rating criteria, but we don't think his symptoms are severe enough to impair his functioning. But that's the wrong analysis. The analysis is each of these rating criteria that are set out in the general rating formula apply across the board to every psychiatric disability except eating disorders, and you look to what the severity is of the symptoms that are substantiated, either substantiated by lay observation from other individuals, lay statements from the veteran, which in the psychiatric context is always a slippery slope, or observation of symptomatology based upon mental health professionals. And those are the things that you evaluate for under the Vasquez-Claudio criteria of symptoms-driven, because it is our position that any mention of medication after consideration of non-compensable and compensable, which weren't at issue in this case, the grant was to assign a 50% rating and reject a 70% rating and a 100% rating. And the other critical error is, the harm, is that in this case, there was a concession by the board that Mr. Birdie suffered from regular hallucinations on a daily basis. Now, just like in Bankhead, hallucinations are only mentioned as a symptom at 100%. And what the board did was to summarily reject that and say, yes, but it's not persistent. And then we get into the circular game with the VA adjudicators, in which they want to use an undefined term like persistent and say, but they're not persistent. But what the board actually said in this case was, is that they didn't demonstrate, because of the presence of hallucinations, that there was an impairment of functioning. But that's the whole reason that the VA uses a VA general rating formula for mental disorders. Because they set out, as the Federal Circuit observed in Vasquez Claudio, the symptom-driven checklist, if you will, that VA adjudicators are to look for in order to rate. And one of those is hallucinations. And just like in Bankhead, you simply can't arbitrarily reject the presence on a daily basis of hallucinations and say that the rating formula doesn't meet that criteria because there's no evidence of impairment. The evidence of impairment is in the general rating criteria. These are the instructions for the VA adjudicator. I'm sorry, I certainly didn't mean to perplex you, Your Honor. And
it's such a perplexed look
on your face.
It's not you, it's me. I want to go back to Judge Meredith's question, right? It seemed to me you've transitioned, that answer to me, right, went to what I'm going to call the second part of the original brief, right, which was under the reasons or bases component. Right? I've got a question about that in a second. But I don't understand the answer you just gave about why the board's mention of medication, under your view, the fact that you take the symptomatology as it comes, even if affected by medication, why that was error, but prejudicial error.
Right, and I was trying to respond to the harm. And the harm is that they misstated the criteria for the 70% and 100% rating and said that the symptoms that were identified at 70 and 100, suicidal ideation and hallucinations, you had to have additional evidence of record.
Let me try it a different way. If we took a pen, an eraser and erased medication, the sentence that the board used about medication.
Yes.
You'd still be able to make the argument you're making now.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so just going back to that first part about medication.
Mm-hmm.
Why, if it's okay for the board to use the level of symptomatology, right? And if you actually said, hey, listen, that's not the big mistake here. The big mistake is the other stuff you're talking about. That's fine. I'm just trying to understand why the board's mention of medication itself was error.
Because the
more prejudicial error.
The use of medication or the ameliorating effects of medication is not a symptom. This rating criteria, as created by the secretary, has an explicitly identified purpose, and that's to evaluate symptoms. Any ameliorating effects of medication taints that process by the very introduction of the notion of medication, because medication is only relevant at the non-compensable and at the 10% level. What is relevant is what the symptoms are, regardless of whether they are or aren't taking medication. Now, Judge Meredith posed the question in terms of examining a veteran when they're taking medication.
Keep answering.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We've already given you 5 extra minutes, but this is a complicated case, so.
I've never been aware that at a VA examination for a person being evaluated for a mental disorder receives medication before the exam. Now, they will look in the file and see if they're being prescribed medication, but I don't believe that any VA examiner is examining a veteran suffering from a mental disorder, even considering the effects of medication. And my point is that mental health professionals don't factor in any ameliorating effects. They use the symptoms to either increase, decrease, or change medication to accommodate to those symptoms that are being presented.
But it's not, and I know I'm repeating myself, it is not an error in your view if the board said, here's a set of the symptoms that this person has.
Yes.
Right? Some of them might be worse because they're taking medication because it's a side effect. Some of them might be better because it's affecting them. As long as they don't make the connection that says the level of symptomatology is because of the medication. If they just look at the level of symptomatology and assuming they do everything else right and they rate based on those levels, the fact that they haven't discounted what the symptoms would be without medication, in your view, is not required. That's not a problem.
Well, I'm not quite sure I would go that far that it's not a problem. To me, the problem in introducing medication as a consideration is that the board is going beyond its expertise. The board, this is a sort of quasi-Colvin violation in my view, because the board is attempting to make decisions.
How so? I mean, imagine a veteran starts taking a course of medication and then all of a sudden, you know, their nightmares reduce or disappear, right? Or, you know, their hallucinations disappear, right? And they note that across a series of treatment notes. I mean, as I understand the line of question Judge Allen's asking you, the board could note the improvement, but they could not ascribe the improvement to the medication. Or, alternately, the board simply would have to ignore any of those ameliorated effects and these appear to be, you know, improvements based on medical intervention, so we can't consider that.
I would suggest, at a minimum, in the context of mental disorders, that it is improper for any VA adjudicator, including the board, to go into the question of medication, except as it relates to whether to give a non-compensable rating or a 10% rating.
So, I mean,
once you're above the 10% rating, then it seems to me that the board goes into the Colvin territory and is using expertise that it does not have to introduce a factor in the analysis of the symptom.
I mean, what would be the expertise? I mean, they're basically just noting self-reported facts.
The effects of the medication are, there is no way that even a professional knows what the effects of the medication are, except by feedback from the veteran and or feedback from the veteran's family or people that are in positions to observe.
Self-report, right.
Right. And therefore, that's all subjective, and the psychiatrist administering that medication has to make a judgment on whether or not that is valid information and adjust the medication up or down, or to remove the medication. And it seems to me that the flaw in any consideration of medication is that it implicitly has the assumption that it can have an ameliorating effect that relates to the impairment of the veteran's functioning. And therein lies the problem, because you're now going into an area of expertise that is beyond that which the board member has. The board should be evaluating medical records, lay testimony that describes the severity, frequency, and duration of symptomatology. And the one thing that is undebatable in this record is that this veteran has hallucinations daily. You can't have daily hallucinations and not be entitled as a matter of law to a 100% rating. Why? For the same reason as suicidal is in the 70%. It wouldn't be there if it was not the expectation of the secretary that the presence of those hallucinations, with the understanding that they must be persistent, unfortunately a term that is not defined, but persistent has to only mean regular, that they happen enough so that they are part of the duration, severity, and of the symptom that is being presented, in this case, hallucinations. Hallucinations are clearly, along with delusions, the most serious impediment to having any kind of functioning in any kind of work-type environment. Because if you're having those, it just eliminates, for all practical intent and purposes, the ability to function.
Let me see, Mr. Carpenter, if we've got some other questions to you. Are you good? So we'll give you your full rebuttal time.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thanks. And Mr. Seifert, as you're making your way to the podium, you can, if you need it, you don't have to take it, you can take an additional 11 minutes, which is what we added on to Mr. Carpenter.
See how this goes. Sorry, Your Honors.
Sorry?
Trying to get the...
We like to be, you know, perfectly set there, so go ahead.
Fair enough. Good morning again. May it please the Court. The Court should affirm the Board's November 3rd, 2021 decision denying a rate in excess of 50% for PTSD prior to April 25th, 2017 for the following two reasons. First, 38 CFR 4.130 explicitly includes medication as a criteria for consideration. So, consistent with Jones and McCarroll, the Board permissibly considered the effects of medication in assessing the appellant's PTSD as relevant to its determination of whether social and occupational impairment warranted a higher rating. Second, while Johnson is not dispositive because is not dispositive of the medication consideration question because McCarroll controls here, 4.130 is effectively successive because of the upwardly cascading occupational social impairment requirements from 4.130. Turning to the first point, under McCarroll...
Sorry to push back there a bit. I mean, everything's ascending, at least in severity, every diagnostic code is. But there's a big difference between stuff that's ascending and successive. I mean, successive, I mean, requires that every single sort of wicket be hit. Where do you get the support that 4.130 is read that way as successive?
Your Honor, if I could restate, we believe that McCarroll controls here, and because 4.130 considers the effects of medication, we believe McCarroll controls. In addition, neither McCarroll nor Jones addressed successive criteria in its decisions, as well as the structure of 4.130 and case law for how to assess that, with it being not just a list of symptoms, and as well as their impact on social and occupational impairment. We believe that 4.130 is not perfectly successive, but rather we don't believe that successive criteria. It is relevant in this particular circumstance because McCarroll controls on this matter.
And so let's jump right into this. So what do you have to say about the argument that the error here was mentioning the medication, right, as opposed to its effect on symptomatology? Does that change your view at all?
We respectfully disagree that that just the mere mention of a medication would be an error here. When looking at medication under 4.130, there's three factual scenarios in the process. The first is at the 0% level, whether medication is required. The second step is at the 10% level, is whether if medication is required, if it controls the symptoms. Then the third step is whether or not if medication is required, but not all symptoms are controlled, and then the focus is on the appellant's symptomology and social and occupational impairment resulting therefrom, based on the evidence record that's available, as well as and looking at the impact of the effects of medication, if raised by the record, if indicated by the record, is an appropriate consideration under McCarroll.
So I'm having trouble though separating the positions here now, other than actually saying the symptom is controlled by medication. If you just looked at the level of symptomatology, I'm not seeing a tremendous amount of daylight between the two positions. Are you?
With respect to the board's review of the evidence. The board's obligation is to focus on the evidence and any relevant evidence, and for 4.130 consider the effects of symptomatology, the actual elements of the disability, the way that they are presently, and the impact on social occupational impairment, and medication is an appropriate consideration in doing so.
It's me, not you. I didn't understand that. Before coming into the courtroom this morning, as my law clerk will tell you, because I've driven him crazy over the last while, okay, because I keep talking about the case, I had understood that really what we were going to be fighting about, arguing about, was it appropriate to consider a certain level of symptomatology that was affected by medication, right? In other words, I had understood from the briefing, which Mr. Carpenter did not write, but was that the issue really came down to the fact that if medication makes symptomatology better, it's error to consider the better level of symptoms, because we need to then consider what would the symptomatology be without regard to medication. That is what I was thinking. It seems that today's argument is not that. We're not going to be playing with what would the symptoms be in a world in which the person wasn't taking medication. It's that the board erred by simply referring to medication use because it was a new criteria. It wasn't that it affected symptomatology, it's that it actually said, hey, this is a reason that it's not as severe as because medication makes it better. That seems to me a different error. And so do you understand the appellant's argument to be that now?
Yes, that's what we understand his argument to be, as presented here today.
And so then, though, the secretary then, it sounds to me, wouldn't disagree with the notion that the board can assess, or the VA, the adjudicator in the first instance, can use the level of symptomatology that exists as a result of medication. Okay, you would be on the same page with that. You would differ with appellant about whether it is error for the board to mention medication use, right? That's still an error or a separation. But as to the fact that you use the level of symptomatology that is presented, whether it's caused by medication or not or something else, you are on board with that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Under McCarroll, the test is the diagnostic code specifically contemplates the effects of medication when read as a whole. And if the answer to that question is yes, then Jones is not applicable in this case, and we submit that the answer is yes here. 384.130 specifically contemplates the effects of medication at the, both the non-committal and 10% evaluation levels. Therefore, Jones is not applicable here, and the board has permissibly considered the effects of medication in denying a rating above 50% in this case. In both Jones and McCarroll, the court considered and noted that diagnostic codes that were similar to 4.130 regarding addressing the effects of medication concluded that those codes contemplated the effects of medication when read as a whole. And in Jones, the court cited to DC 5025 for fibromyalgia, which grants a 10% rating for fibromyalgia for symptoms that require continuous medication for control, and the court noted that as an example of a regulation where the secretary demonstrated that the effects of medication were consideration for that regulation, that the board may consider those. Also in McCarroll the board held that when read as a whole, DC 7101 contemplated the effects of medication, where a 10% rating is awarded to a veteran who has a history of diastolic pressure of 100 or more predominantly, and who requires continuous medication to control that. In both of those circumstances, medication was only considered at the 10% rating level, but that was the only place it was considered. And similarly here with 4.130, we have the consideration of medication at both the non-committal and 10% rating level.
So I'm with you, right, in the sense that Jones and McCarroll are important not just for establishing the rule about medication, but also for establishing the generic principle that, as I was saying once to somebody, contemplation doesn't mean repetition. Right. In other words, you don't have to repeat at every level if the structure of the diagnostic code would say that's the natural way to read it, right? But I don't read Jones or McCarroll as saying that that always is the case, right? So what's your best shot at, if you were going to sit down and write the opinion, for why, recognizing that Jones and McCarroll say that that can happen. You can just say medication at one level, but it goes through the diagnostic code as a whole. Why should 4.130 be read to have the medication requirement that exists at other levels go all the way to the top?
Yes, Your Honor. So looking at 4.130, it follows a similar structure as DC 7101 did in McCarroll. In McCarroll, DC 7101, at the 10% rating level, the regulation stated that the question was whether it was controlled. If it was controlled, if the symptoms were controlled at 10%, that's one factual scenario. The second factual scenario is if it's not controlled, then the veteran was afforded a rating based on. His actual blood pressure levels of moving up through the rating criteria. Similarly here for 4.130, we actually have three factual scenarios. The first being, as previously mentioned, at 0%, whether or not medication is required. The second at 10%, it's required but controlled by continuous medication. But then from 10% to 100%, the medication is required but not controlled, but does not control the symptoms. And then at that point, the focus is on the symptoms and their impact on social and occupational and social functioning. And then at that point, all the board is doing is looking at the evidence, looking at the symptomology, and the social occupational impairment resulting therefrom. And within that, so long as the evidence raises or suggests that medication may have an impact or maybe may control a symptom, then at that point, where it's controlled, that particular symptom would not be able to justify a increased rating in that particular circumstance. So ultimately, the effects of medication based on the structure of 4.130, compare that to DC 7101, so long as because it contemplates the effects of medication, and based on the structure and the similarities, looking at the evidence record and the symptomology and social occupational impairments, is allowed, and medication is a relevant criteria to be considered at the 10 to 100% rating level.
Council, does VA have any internal guidance, manual provisions, or something similar that you put out to the field explaining what you just explained as the understanding of the diagnostic code?
Yes, Your Honor, we do. And this recently came to my attention in preparing for oral arguments. VA has decided to codify this position, our official understanding of how 4.130, how medication works in 4.130, consistent with our position here, and specifically in February 15, 2022, VA published a proposed rulemaking, 87 Federal Register 8498-8506, proposing the addition of a note to 4.130 that would clarify that the general rating formula for mental disorders rates based on the actual elements of the disability present, which includes a consideration of narrative effects of medication, and the final rating would be based on the disabling symptomology that exists after the consideration of any ameliorating effects that may come from the symptoms. This proposed rulemaking also clarifies that the adjudicators are not to speculate on what these symptoms may be without medication. Rather, it's the focus actually on the actual elements of the disability present, which would include the effects of ameliorating effects of medication.
And so this is formal rulemaking?
Yes, it's a proposed rule. The final rule is in progress, and we would be happy to provide this proposed rulemaking to the court following the oral argument.
So what do we do with that? If that now is going to be the formal position, does that mean that that's a change and that therefore the rating prior to whatever the effective date of that will be was something different?
No, Your Honor, it's not a change. It's merely a statement of our current position, because we're currently here addressing the issue, and it's a statement of our position, and just clarifies any uncertainty that may exist regarding whether or not the military effects of the medication may be considered under 4.130.
Okay.
So that's it. You would not, like right now, we would not need to, I mean, technically, maybe not give you deference for that, but if this passes, you would definitely get our deference to the extent that this would be an interpretive question. I guess that would be the significance of it right now.
Or even, I suppose, well, I guess it would have to be our deference.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an official position if you put it out there.
It could have court's indulgence for a second.
Sure.
Thank you, Your Honors. I apologize. This proposed rule is our position. It's not a change. It's merely a clarification and reflects how adjudicators have been adjudicating 4.130. We believe, but once it goes through the final process, it does become a final rule. Then yes, our deference would be
well. But I mean, arguably, if this is actually going through formal notice and comment rulemaking, it would be subject to Chevron deference because you would be able to you're adopting a part of a regulation, which means you have to have a statutory basis to do that, right? The development of the rating schedule. And so at that point, you're not looking at an ambiguous regulation because it's part of the regulation. But, you know, that's neither here nor there because this is the first time hearing of it. So at least in the context of this case. So in a nutshell, what is the Secretary's position about the import of the proposed regulation from February 2022?
it's not a change at all. It's just a clarification of our position, and it's.
How do we know that? Does the regulatory history from this say that? In other words, Judge Meredith had asked you, is there any guidance out there? And the guidance you pointed to was a proposed regulation, right? That the Secretary's position today is that proposed regulation merely says what the world was like without it, right? How do we know what the world was like without it? Was there something, to follow up with Judge Meredith's questions, was there something else that existed before that that was less formal that now the agency is formalizing?
Yes, Your Honor. Could I ask for the court's indulgence one more time?
Oh, sure. I thought you were asking me a question.
I appreciate it. The Secretary is not aware of any informal guidance on this particular subject. What this is a formalization of how the adjudicators have been adjudicating which is looking at the evidence with a focus on level of symptomology and social occupational impairment and adjudicating 4.130, including medication as a relevant criteria.
And you said this was a note to the explanatory note to the diagnostic code?
Yes, it'll be an explanatory note.
Okay. And it's your position, it basically codifies what's always been the position just never articulated before?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you. And yes, turning to the board's reasons or bases, in looking at hallucinations, the board thoroughly reviewed the evidence of record and noted where hallucinations were mentioned in the record, and concluded that based on the record that symptoms were were leave successfully, as well as if there was no evidence of occupational or social impairment related to hallucinations, because any both the symptom as well as social as well as the resulting social occupational impairment, and the board made that an appropriate finding with regard to yet and regarding suicidal ideation. The board again reviewed the record, looked at the evidence, noted that there was only an isolated mention of suicidal ideation. However, there was no indication that any medication was related to or prescribed related to suicidal ideation. And what the board also noted that there were numerous other.
What you just mentioned medication. I didn't follow that.
Just with. In its analysis regarding suicidal ideation, Your Honor, there was no, and looking at the record, there was no evidence that there was any prescribed medication related to suicidal ideation specifically.
So why wouldn't that be error? I mean, that wasn't something that was focused on a lot by appellant in the briefing, but it seemed to me that is much closer to saying that the board added for me. That the board added a criteria that is nowhere in the diagnostic code, which is the absence of prescribed medication.
Your Honor, I apologize. That might be me misspeaking. I'm not saying that the board contemplated medication one way or the other for suicidal ideation. I'm introducing my review of what the board did here, and that's that medication wasn't, in my review of the record, there was no indication of medication. The board did not mention medication with respect to suicidal ideation, so it was not a factor that was considered by the board when addressing suicidal ideation.
So this was your argument to us that the fact that there wasn't medication prescribed directly related to suicidal ideation supports the board's analysis, even though the board itself didn't say anything about medication as it relates to suicidal ideation. Am I following that?
Sorry, Your Honor. At least I thought during appellant's opening that he mentioned that suicidal ideation, there was medication related to it. I was trying to clear up that medication was not a factor in the suicidal ideation discussion in the board's analysis. That was my intention there. But with respect to suicidal ideation, the board did note the one isolated report that appellant had, but also that there were multiple denials of suicidal ideation throughout the evidence of record, and the board. Board plausibly concluded based on the record and based on the symptomology and that there was not sufficient social and occupational impairment with respect to that to warrant a rating above 50% in this particular case. And so we believe that the board's reasons or basis here were adequate. And if there are no further questions from the court, we would respectfully request that you affirm the board's decision here.
Thank you. We'll give you your 10 minutes, Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you very much, Rose.
I would like to start the rebuttal with going back to what the rating formula says and, more importantly, what it does not say. At the non-compensable level, the rating criteria says that a mental condition has been formally diagnosed, but the symptoms are not severe enough to require medication. So clearly that means if there is a diagnosis, but medication isn't being prescribed, it's at a non-compensable level. Seems to me that at best, that is a nullity. It has no application to the consideration of ameliorating effects. It is simply an observation that there is a diagnosis, but that he does not require continuous medication, so it's non-compensable. Well, we then go to the rating criteria, the 10% rating, and it reads, occupational and social impairment due to mild or transient symptoms which decrease work efficiency, ability to perform occupational tasks, only during periods of significant stress. That identifies the specific symptoms under the symptom-driven analysis of the Federal Circuit of this VA regulation. It then says, in the alternative, or, now this is for the entitlement to a 10% rating, symptoms are controlled by continuous medication. That, in our view, is capitated by the notion that the only thing that this VA rating schedule is contemplating relative to the ameliorating effects of medication is that if the symptoms are controlled by continuing medication, you have to assign a 10% rating. Our view is that once you rise above the 30% rating, which is what was initially assigned in this case, and then increased by the board to the 50% rating, there is no further consideration of medication. And to consider medication is an error of law. Why? Because it muddies the water in terms of an analysis of the symptom. I would point direct the court's attention to the RBA at page 15. At page 15 in the second full paragraph, the board indicates or acknowledges that it has considered the veteran's reports of auditory hallucination. However, the board does not find that this warrants a higher rating. Although persistent hallucinations are listed as a symptom to be considered under the 10% rating, and we believe this is the critical error language, there is no evidence in the record of the veteran's hallucinations having any impact on his social or occupational functioning. That is an error, and the reason that we are here today is for this court to review the VA regulation 4.130 and its general rating criteria for mental disorders and interpret what these rating criteria mean.
Could I just stop you right there?
Yes.
Right. I'm very interested in hearing the rest about the hallucination point, so I don't want to distract you.
I'll come back to you.
Have time.
Okay.
Right. But on page 15, RBA 15, the point that you just read, okay, how, if at all, does that connect to the issue about contemplation of medication?
It does not relate to contemplation of medication. It relates to how to interpret whether contemplation of the ameliorating effects is in this rating criteria.
Okay, this
is the ultimate question in our view.
Okay, this is the critical point for me. I haven't talked to anybody else, right? And I want to be totally upfront. I don't get that last point. I did get that last point before I came into the courtroom. Because what I thought this was about was, if somebody is taking medication, we can't look at the world that exists because of the medication they're taking. So we have to pretend that the medication isn't there, and in my range of motion, ask what it would be like without the cortisone.
Right.
I understood that's not what's going on now. I understand that argument now. I understand that. But what I don't understand then is how the medication point fits into this, because the board might be wrong that there's no evidence in the record of occupational or social functioning, right? But that doesn't seem to me to get to this question about contemplation of the ameliorative effects of medication. That's what I need help with.
Okay. The government just stood before this panel and said that it is the policy and has been the established policy, unwritten, of the VA to consider the ameliorating effects. Our point is that does not appear in the regulation. There is no reference to what is now proposed by the VA in a regulation that will include a note which purports, according to what this panel just heard, to have codified that policy. Well, let's begin with the proposition that notes don't codify anything. What is codified is the text of the regulation. The Secretary did not tell this panel that somehow his amendment to the text of the rating schedule has been changed substantively. He says to this court only that they have written a note that now permits them to do that. Well, I think this court is correct that that has nothing to do with the evaluation of this board's decision on this issue. And this board, based upon the concession of the Secretary, was permitted to review the ameliorating effects. We do not believe that there is any basis in the plain language of the regulation as reflected in the rating criteria from 30 to 100% that supports that. And by the board having crossed that line and attempted to evaluate on a criteria other than a criteria that is present was an error of law.
I'm going to try one more time because it's not you, really. The paragraph that you identified for us, the hallucination paragraph, how does that tie to the point that you were just making?
Right. Because nothing in the 100% rating criteria makes any reference to medication. Ameliorated effects, controlled of symptoms, to make the comparison, to invite this court to go down the rabbit hole that Your Honor believed was what we were going to be talking about. But that's precisely what the note now is going to invite, that somehow this court is going to be called upon to determine, to make an assessment of some balance between the controlling effects of medication, the ameliorating effects of medication, which is simply beyond the text of the regulation and the rating criteria. The rating criteria, as articulated, includes reference to hallucinations. And in the language of the statute, it says, occupational and social impairment due to such symptoms as, and one of those listed as symptoms is persistent delusions or hallucinations. And that then creates a basis both in the record and in this regulation for the assignment of 100% rating without any consideration of ameliorating effects. And therefore, when the board did that, and the board said that there was no evidence of record, the evidence of record was the hallucinations. That's what needed to be there. The VA, the Secretary, made a public policy decision to say that one of the such-as symptoms for total occupational impairment is persistent hallucinations, which were in the record. And therefore, following the plain language of the regulation as reflected in the general rating formula, then the board was obligated by law to have awarded a 100% rating because that symptom was in the criteria as identified, not by some other evidence outside of the rating criteria. Unless there's further questions from the panel, I thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments and your briefing in the matter. The court will come down and greet counsel, but the case is submitted.
All right.